This podcast of The Exchange is sponsored by Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org.
And the Dagoba Group, a global diversity and inclusion consulting practice with specialties in unconscious bias, leadership dynamics, and client engagement. Authors of the book, The Inclusion Dividend. More at thedagobagroup.com.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Opportunity.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. In terms of media attention, the 2016 presidential primary has been mostly about the Republicans. And it's understandable, not only are there 16 candidates, there's also all the pyrotechnics surrounding the Trump factor. But this weekend, in the Granite State, it's the Democrats' turn. The state party holds its annual convention in Manchester, and all the Democratic presidential candidates are expected to be there. And just for the record, there are six of them, relishing the chance to speak to an audience of the party faithful. That's especially true for those contenders not named Hillary Clinton, who charge party officials with skimping on debates this year, limiting their ability to reach a wider audience. Today in The Exchange, the Democratic presidential candidates, let's hear from you as we cover this race. The Exchange number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have two guests for the hour. With us in studio is Paul Steinhauser, political director and anchor for NH1 News. Before that, Paul was the longtime political editor at CNN and a correspondent. Paul, welcome back. Good to see you.
Great to be here, Laura. Thank you.
Also with us, Dante Scala, associate professor at UNH, fellow at the Carsey School of Public Policy. His new co-authored book, The Four Faces of the Republican Party and the Fight for the 2016 Presidential Nomination, is due out later this year. Nancy is also teaching a free online course on the New Hampshire presidential primary with Andy Smith at UNH. And Dante, welcome back. Good to see you.
Thank you. Good morning.
So, Dante, overall theme or feeling about this race? As I said, the Republicans have gotten most of the attention this year.
Yeah, but I think that's about to change because Bernie Sanders now is the front runner in New Hampshire. He's ahead in several polls. He's basically tied with Hillary Clinton in Iowa. So the Iowa caucuses and New Hampshire primary, the first two states that will vote next year. Arguably, any candidate who is running ahead in New Hampshire and is even in Iowa is giving the supposed front runner, Hillary Clinton, a run for her money. And so, you know, for all the talk about Sanders getting large crowds, but not following it up with real poll numbers and operations in the first caucus states, that he was more of a protest candidate than a real candidate for the nomination, I think the conventional wisdom is quickly updating on that. Now, obviously, Clinton has significant advantages within the party, and we can talk about those. But I think the post-Labor Day story is Sanders is in it to win New Hampshire, and he stands a good chance of doing so.
Wow. So making that annual party convention this weekend all the more interesting to watch. Paul Steinhauser, your broad thoughts about this Democratic primary, and then we'll get into the details.
Laura, the fact that we're even having this show, the fact you decided to do a show just on Democratic primary shows that there is a race. I mean, who would have thought 4 months ago that we would be sitting here right now talking about this? Well, Hillary Clinton was going to be was the overwhelming front runner. She was going to be the nominee. That was the conventional wisdom. Chuck it out the door. That is long gone. Dante mentioned the polls. Three polls here in this state in August showed Bernie Sanders ahead by single digits. A CBS News YouGov poll came out yesterday. I don't know if I believe it or not. Has him up a whopping 22 points here in New Hampshire. And then there's Vice President Joe Biden. He's looking at all this. He's very much thinking about jumping into the race. If that happens, wow, we've got a great story already. It's going to be an amazing story.
Well, and you mentioned Joe Biden, so let's just talk about that for a moment. People are wondering what Vice President Biden might do. Paul, from what I've heard, you know, people say, he doesn't really seem to have the heart in it, but you seem to say he's still holding out.
Publicly, we've heard him three times now over the last 3 weeks talking about how he's still so emotionally drained and still emotionally distraught over the loss of his eldest son, Beau Biden, who died back in May. He's been very public about that and the grieving process. But behind the scenes, there are a number of top Biden political aides who have been working with him for decades who are laying the groundwork for a campaign if he says yes. The decision, of course, is going to be his and his wife Jill's. But if he runs, you've already got the Draft Biden group, which is up and running, very much in the ready for Hillary model. And a lot of his top aides are out there right now, his top political aides, checking on fundraising, checking on organization. So if he says yes, there will be a ground, a kind of an organization ready to go.
Okay. Well, on this note, I want to play for everybody Joe Biden on the Colbert Show recently talking about this issue that you mentioned, Paul, whether or not he's emotionally ready to run. Let's hear.
And I want to talk about the elephant in the room, which in this case is a donkey. Do you have anything you'd like to tell us right now about your plans?
Yes. I think you should run for president again, and I'll be your vice president.
Well, sir, you said recently, you said this weekend that you don't know if you are emotionally prepared to run for president.
Look, I don't think any man or woman should run for president unless, number one, they know exactly why they would want to be president, and two, they can look at the folks out there and say, I promise you, you have my whole heart, my whole soul, my energy, and my passion to do this. And I'd be lying if I said that I knew I was there.
Again, that's Vice President Joe Biden recently on the Colbert Show talking about whether or not he might run for president. Today in the exchange, we're talking about the Democratic presidential primary, checking in on the candidates in light of the state party convention this weekend. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us. 1-800-892-6477. Democrats, your turn today. What do you want to hear from these candidates? Who have you been watching? Who are you interested in? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And Dante Scala, what do you make of that that sound that we just heard from Joe Biden?
Sounds like a man who's conflicted about what to do. And one has to think that Joe Biden, someone who's aspired to the presidency for most of his adult life, would like to give it one more try, because this 2016 clearly would be his last opportunity to do so. But given the year that he and his family have been through, it's difficult. And on the one hand, vice presidents, sitting vice presidents, typically get the Democratic nomination. But
it's a good platform to run from.
Certainly. But the fact that he hasn't gotten in previously, the fact that he was sitting on the sidelines for so long, suggests that Biden is not quite like other vice presidents, that he saw himself perhaps and others saw him as a weaker candidate than, say, an Al Gore, for example, back in 2000. So difficult decision to make, but there are a lot of donors still waiting to weigh in, whether for Hillary Clinton or for someone else. I don't think the donor class of the Democratic Party, not the large donor class, wants to go with Bernie Sanders. But if Joe Biden's there, that's perhaps a more plausible alternative.
So go ahead, Paul.
Yeah. I spoke, following up on what Dottie just said about the donor class, I spoke to a Biden source last night who's pretty plugged into the Biden world, and he said that some Obama bundlers seem to be lining up. That's what he told me late last night. Lining up for Joe Biden if he runs. Because if he runs, where is he going to grab his support? It's probably not going to come that much, a little bit from the left side of the party, which now Bernie Sanders has kind of grabbed. A lot of that support, a lot of those fundraisers are going to come from the center, the Hillary Clinton, which is right now Hillary Clinton country.
So here's the big question then, and we'll definitely talk about Bernie Sanders in a moment, and hear some sound from Senator Sanders on the stump. But why aren't those sort of centrist, big money Democratic folks, Paul, going with Hillary Clinton?
Well, a lot of them already are with Clinton, but they're seeing what's going on. They've seen this email controversy grow from a small story to a humongous story that has really distracted her campaign. They see these poll numbers. They get nervous, and they want maybe a plan B. So if things get worse for Hillary Clinton, plan B would be Joe Biden.
Dante?
And as Paul said, these donors were Obama donors. Okay, back in 2008, they were for Obama versus Hillary Clinton. So they're not quite sure, perhaps, whether they see Hillary Clinton as the natural heir to the Obama presidency. You know, and from their eyes, she's running for Obama's third term and to secure his legacy. That's the way Obama donors see it. So the question for them is, do they see Joe Biden as a more natural heir? I mean, he is Obama's vice president, as opposed to Hillary Clinton. And that, you know, that tension between Clinton and Obama people go back now for a decade.
So how much is the email controversy that Paul touched on dragging Hillary Clinton down, Dante, and keeping those establishment types on the sideline?
I mean, no question it's had some effect. I don't think Democratic primary voters care a lot about the email controversy, or they're ready to say, this is just like Benghazi. We've heard enough about the emails. We know what there is to know, and Republicans and the media are making it into a bigger deal. But donors are looking at Hillary Clinton standing in the polls. They look at her approval numbers among all voters. They look at how she's doing head-to-head versus Republicans. Now, one could argue those polls this far out are meaningless, but they're not meaningless to donors. And they're looking and saying, who can win? And one of Hillary Clinton's main assets is her inevitability, her electability. If people, donors, question that, that could be a problem going into the fall.
And as Paul started out with those poll numbers showing Bernie Sanders strongly ahead in some instances, that causes concern in the donor class, even though, Dante, among voters, it's early.
Absolutely.
Well, let's hear Hillary Clinton in a recent interview with ABC News, where she was asked by David Muir whether she made a mistake in using that private email account. This is the whole, you know, did I make a mistake? Did I apologize enough issue? Let's hear.
Did you make a mistake?
I did. As I said, it was allowed and there was no hiding it. It was totally above board. Everybody in the government I communicated with, and that was a lot of people, knew I was using a personal email. But I'm sorry that it has, you know, raised all of these questions. I do take responsibility for having made what is clearly not the best decision.
Paul Steinhauser, you interviewed Hillary Clinton a couple weeks back. Did she talk to you about this at all?
Didn't apologize back then. Took a while for her to get to this apology, didn't it? Probably would have been a lot smarter if they apologized months ago. But in fact, when she made this apology, it was the second interview in a row, because the day before she was on with Andrea Mitchell of NBC, and she didn't apologize all the way. She apologized if people misunderstood what is going on. So it took her a while to get there. She was kind of pushed and shoved, I think, in a way to get there. Maybe there are legal reasons why that she didn't want to do it at first either. But finally apologizing. This would have been a lot easier if she'd come out and said this back in May or April or May.
Dante, you want to jump in?
Well, yeah, certainly there's been an evolution in what she's had to say about this. And can she put this behind her now? Unclear. I mean, a lot depends on the FBI and their investigation, what they're going to find and whether anything goes further with this. Again, I don't think that Democrats by and large put a lot of stock into this.
More a general election issue, Dante?
Well, I think it's more a general – I mean, it may be a general election issue, but the media has focused on this. And, you know, we've seen this problem between the media and the Clintons going back two decades now, where the political media feel as if the Clintons are too reluctant to be transparent, and the Clintons feel like the national political media is always against them. And so it just took a spark to ignite that whole controversy again, and that in this case was the email on the server.
Again, the phone number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Democrats, what do you want to hear from your presidential candidates this year? Which Democratic candidates have you seen campaigning around the Granite State? Which candidates would you like to see more of? Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Join us. And Jane is calling in from Manchester. Hi, Jane. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Good morning. I have a quick question. We all know what Bernie Sanders thinks about the big banks of our country. But apart from him, who amongst all of these candidates are the most willing to tackle the legal issues that surround the Wall Street debacle that brought our country down so devastatingly, given the hands-off approach of Eric Holder?
And sounds like you might have been an Elizabeth Warren person, Jane. That's her big issue, isn't it?
I certainly was.
Yeah. All right. So who are you going to go for now, Jane?
Bernie.
All right. Thank you for calling in. Paul, big banks, Wall Street, people still upset about that.
Very much upset about it. It's been a huge issue for the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. Martin O'Malley also very much out in front on this issue as well. And Hillary Clinton has put out a plan as well. So to her credit, she has. But Martin O'Malley has been talking about this nonstop. So I would have to put Bernie Sanders and Martin O'Malley at the top two of that list.
Yeah. How about you, Dante?
Yeah. I mean, Clinton has talked about, for instance, putting an end to quarterly capitalism where companies – you know, focus on the short run as opposed to the long run. And so she wants to change the incentives that companies have to force them to or incentivize them to create jobs and look long term as opposed to short term. So they're all getting plans out on that. But clearly Sanders is, you know, the most vocal. And a lot of times with primaries, it's not about where candidates stand on issues because Democrats more or less stand together with some differences, but it's what their priorities are. And when you hear a Bernie Sanders speech, you know that Sanders is going to emphasize income inequality, the influence of big corporations and so forth. And he's going to put that emphasis on it in a way that Clinton will not.
Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Jane, thanks for that call. A couple emails have come in, gentlemen. Here's one from Rob. He says, all we hear from the media and political pundits over here on the Republican side is that Tea Party conservative candidates like Ted Cruz are too far to the right to get elected in the general election. Rob says, couldn't the same be said for far left Democrats like Bernie and Elizabeth Warren? If a Tea Party candidate is a dead man walking, is it realistic to think a socialist could get elected? Rob, thank you for the email. Dante, what do you think?
Rob raises a good question. And I suspect that if Hillary Clinton continues to trail Bernie Sanders in places like Iowa and New Hampshire, we're going to hear the so-called electability question raised again and again, if not by Clinton herself, certainly by her surrogates. And it's certainly a question. I mean, Republicans, you will hear a lot about you heard over the last several years about how Barack Obama was a so-called socialist. But now there's an actual socialist running for if he becomes the major party nominee of the Democratic Party, you're going to hear that word an awful lot over the next year.
So that's the concern of the establishment, Paul.
You know, and here's
that wants to win.
Right, that wants. And here's the other point. Republican candidates and Republican groups have spent 2 years now blasting Hillary Clinton. They have not touched anybody else. Bernie Sanders, they will start firing away. And you're going to hear a lot of criticism if Bernie starts becoming the front runner or if Vice President Biden gets in. So that will happen immediately if Hillary Clinton loses her front runner status.
Well, and then there's that Clinton-Sanders dynamic, which so far has been very polite. Here's Bernie Sanders on Face the Nation in August. He's asked to respond to those who question Clinton's trustworthiness because of the email issue. And let's hear what Senator Sanders says there.
For a variety of reasons, Hillary Clinton has been under all kinds of attack for many, many years. In fact, I can't think of many personalities who have been attacked for more reasons than Hillary Clinton. And by the way, let me be frank, and I'm running against her. Some of it is sexist. You know, I don't know that a man would be treated the same way that Hillary is. So all that I can say is I have known Hillary Clinton for 25 years. I admire her. I respect her. I like her. She and I have very different points of view on a number of issues. We have differences of opinion on the Trans-Pacific Partnership. We have differences on Keystone Pipeline. She voted for the war in Iraq. I helped lead the opposition against that. She voted for the Patriot Act. I voted against it.
So there's some of the issues, Dante Scala, where the two are different, but you don't hear them sort of him sort of going after her.
No. Well,
saying, I like her, I respect her.
Yeah. I mean, Bernie Sanders has had no reason to go after Hillary Clinton. I mean, he's rising in the polls so quickly without launching any kind of attacks. And remember, primary voters, it's important to remember, they like to hear a positive message. You know, they like to hear a negative message against the other party. They like to hear Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, Martin O'Malley go after Republicans, but they don't like to see Democrats go after other Democrats. So there's a good reason for Bernie Sanders to stay positive. For Hillary Clinton, even though some donors would like to see Clinton start to go after Sanders now. Again, there's a danger there in going negative and going negative so early, relatively speaking, with months to go for Clinton to go after Sanders.
All right. Well, lots and lots more to talk about after a short break. Lots of emails have come in, too, gentlemen, including one who wants to talk about the limited Democratic debates this year. So we'll talk about that. Let's hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Stay with us. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, with most of the attention on Republicans in this year's presidential primary, we're taking a look at the Democratic presidential field this hour with the party's state convention this weekend and the Democratic presidential candidates expected to attend. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Democrats, it's your turn today. Which candidates do you want to see more of? What do you want to hear from these candidates as they come into the state this weekend? And how do you feel the very busy Republican primary is affecting the race on the Democratic side? We'd love to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. And Dante Scala, Paul Steinhauser, let's go right back to our listeners. Michelle's joining us from New Boston. Hi, Michelle. Go ahead. You're in The Exchange.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to make a quick statement about Hillary. I've been a fan of Hillary for a really long time. And this whole email scandal has really tainted me. And not because I don't believe she's innocent. I completely do believe that she didn't break the law. But the fact that she came out and apologized for something that I feel like she shouldn't have apologized. So she kind of lost my support because of that.
Wow. So you actually didn't appreciate that apology that a lot of people were calling for, Michelle?
No, I didn't. I feel like she should have stood her ground. Mm. She didn't break the law in any way, and she should have stood by that.
So who are you going to vote for now then in the primary, Michelle?
I don't know. I'm kind of at a loss.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. Dante, what do you think?
It's interesting that, you know, there are all these cross pressures on a campaign, and she's hearing from one thing from donors, perhaps, who are reading the newspapers and following the elite media and saying, well, look, you've got to do something now. And they're big followers of the conventional wisdom that if you don't apologize, it's going to linger forever and so forth. And then that's at one level. And then there are voters like Michelle who are thinking about this in terms of, you know, Democrats versus Republicans. And it's for her, it was a character check that you don't apologize to, you know, what I'm guessing she might see as something that was launched by Republicans in the media, but not something that needed an authentic apology.
Well, here's an email on that point from Christopher in Manchester. He says, I read that Hillary, quote, confessed in an interview the other day to being a moderate/centrist. I found it kind of refreshing as candidates in both party continually race to the extremes to try to placate their bases. Could it also be that she has ceded the left to Sanders and is proactively trying to claim the middle if Biden runs? Christopher, thank you so much. What do you think, Paul? You touched on this earlier with our talk about where Joe Biden would fit in.
I think most of his support, much of it would come from the center rather than from the far left. He's going to be running as the third term for President Barack Obama. That's what, even though she says she isn't, that's what, you know, Hillary Clinton is running for. So, yeah, I think he would grab some support from the left, but most of it would come from the more moderate, more middle part of the Democratic Party.
Dante?
Yeah, it's interesting to think about what motivates voters, right? You know, how much is ideology a factor and how much are there more intangible things perhaps? And, you know, are voters good at placing candidates on a spectrum? You know, on the Democratic side, it's basically from left of center to the far left. And it'll be interesting to see whether Clinton, you know, there are a lot of moderate Democrats in New Hampshire. And the question will be, are they going to rally to Hillary Clinton in the months to come versus someone like Sanders, who's really appealing right now, you know, sure to the far left, but you look across the spectrum, a lot of moderate Democrats like Bernie too, but maybe they're not quite aware of the differences between him and Hillary Clinton.
Well, thanks, Christopher, for the email. And again, the number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Here's another email from Ray in Whitefield, who says, why do the political pundits continue to underestimate Bernie Sanders? Unless he implodes, Ray says, he will be the Democratic nominee. Ray says, Senator Sanders' support will be evident this weekend. If Mr. Biden decides to run, he will hurt Mrs. Clinton. Senator Sanders' support will not be damaged. And I think, you know, you touched on that already, Paul, but what about his point, Dante Scala, that Bernie Sanders will be the Democratic nominee?
It would be quite something to see someone who doesn't actually consider himself a member of the Democratic Party, right, who's run as a socialist.
Well, he's an independent.
Great point, though, Dante. Great point.
Yeah, but he's not. Right. Yeah, he's not. He caucuses with the Democrats, certainly votes with them very, very often, but he's not a Democrat.
And we still don't know for sure whether he's going to – we think he will get on the ballot here in New Hampshire, but that's up to Secretary of State Gardner because he is not a Democrat, right?
Yeah, and so I suspect we're going to hear that over the next few months, that he's – you know, well, Hillary Clinton's one of us and Bernie Sanders, yeah, he votes with us, but that's a different thing.
What about the word socialist? There's been a lot of sort of back and forth in the media about, you know, whether we should use that word or the word democratic socialist or – I mean, how does that word, Dante, resonate with average voters?
I suspect it resonates as something that's alien to them and alien to American politics as they know it. And that's why if Bernie Sanders does become the nominee of the Democratic Party – we will hear Bernie Sanders and socialist mentioned in every 30-second ad that will appear that Republicans will run. We can get into like theories of socialism and so forth. But as far as an average American voter, I think socialist is something alien to them. And my guess is it would be more negative than positive.
Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Lots of emails today, guys. Here's one from Becky, who says, so glad you're covering the Dems. I was disappointed that the DNC has limited the debates in what appears to be an attempt to protect their chosen candidate, Clinton. Becky says, it's hard enough for Bernie to get proper coverage, as his only PAC is the People's PAC, without all the millions behind him. Bad move by the DNC, she says. Thanks, Becky, for the email. And boy, this is a giant issue that we should talk about, folks. Paul Steinhauser, I love your thoughts first there.
Here's the storyline. The Democratic National Committee coming out about a month ago and saying we'll have six sanctioned debates. New Hampshire and Iowa, South Carolina, the early voting states in the primaries and caucuses only get one each. Republicans are doing the same thing, right? We only get one Republican debate here, one in Iowa, one in South Carolina. They're overall having 12 debates. They've got more candidates. Their debate schedule's already started. This Democratic schedule would start in the middle of October with a CNN debate in Nevada. The Democratic debate here in New Hampshire is buried. It is in the middle of December. It's right during the holiday season. It's a month and a half before the primary.
What's the thinking there? Right
before
Christmas.
Call Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the chair of the Democratic National Committee, and ask. This debate schedule has gotten a lot of attention the last couple of weeks. A lot of people, a lot of top Democrats, even two vice chairs of the DNC saying this is wrong. We either have to increase the number of sanctioned debates or allow unsanctioned debates. So this has become a big talker. There's a lot of pushback. But as of now, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the chair of the party, has not budged. But I don't know. I've talked to some top people in the party, and they say, listen, her position is probably untenable. It's going to change eventually.
Okay, a couple more questions for you guys on this. But first, I want to hear from Martin O'Malley. He is the former governor of Maryland, mayor of Baltimore, and he's the Democratic candidate that has been the most upset about this and has really been pushing the issue. Here's Martin O'Malley in an interview with CNN last month, again, decrying the Democratic Party for limiting debates.
The people all have a right to hear where we stand in debates. And it's easy not to take a position if the party limits the number of debates, isn't it? But once you're in a debate and you're on stage, then the whole public sees whether you're triangulating, avoiding issues, or not taking a stand. And that's not what leadership's about. Leadership's about being clear, about forging a new consensus, not about putting your finger to the wind and following polls or ducking and not taking stands on issues. That's why we need debates. We actually have solutions that'll move our country forward. The other guys tonight in their debate will sound like the greatest hits of the 80s and 90s. I bet you won't hear one of them admit that it was their policies that led to this inequality, that led to the worst recession since the Great Depression. Our party has solutions, and it's a mistake for us to try to hide them under a bushel basket and not talk about the ideas that serve our country.
Okay, so you can hear the frustration there, Dante Scala, from Maryland's Martin O'Malley in that CNN interview. What do you think?
Well, Martin O'Malley needs all the free media or earned media that he can get and from debates, and especially given how much attention debates have been getting this whole year. We're seeing on the Republican side, the first debate got great ratings and so forth.
And it's made a difference for some candidates. It's really bolstered their fortunes, like Carly Fiorina, Ben Carson, John Kasich.
Yeah. And at least, you know, the conventional wisdom tells us that fewer debates would favor the front runner, and that would be Hillary Clinton, or at least it was when, you know, they set the debate schedule. But having, as Paul mentioned, having a debate in the middle of December in New Hampshire several weeks before the primary really goes against the traditions of the, you know, to have that late debate. And Hillary Clinton knows that because she was a benefactor of that late debate the weekend before the primary in back in 2008, which a lot of people point to as a turning point that got Clinton a comeback in New Hampshire just a few days later.
Go ahead, Paul.
No, great points there. Martin O'Malley also has been very vocal. In an interview with me just 2 weeks ago, he also called for three debates in Iowa, three in New Hampshire. He's been doing that in all of his interviews. He's got the most to gain from those debates. Bernie Sanders, though, and his campaign, not as vocal about debates, but they would like to see more debates. Even Hillary Clinton, when she was here in New Hampshire last weekend, was asked about it, and she said, yes, if there are more debates, I'll be happy to show up. You know, because of all this and because there is a glaring hole on the Democratic calendar leading into their primary, we at NH1 announced a forum, not a debate, a forum right now, which would not break the rules for the DNC. We announced this last Thursday. We're going to call it the Live Free or Die Forum. It's going to be on February 3rd. That's 2 days after the Iowa caucuses and 6 days before the Democratic primary. So we're trying to, you know, have something on the calendar there so New Hampshire can see all the candidates together, and we're looking forward to it.
So NH1, February 3rd, the Live Free or Die Forum, not debate.
Forum. Now, we'll see what happens because it's early, and if the Democratic National Committee changes their rules and allows unsanctioned debates or allows a sanctioned debate, of course, we would love to turn this into a debate, and we would, of course, look at a national partner if need be. But right now, it's a forum because that's what the DNC would allow.
Sure. So you're going to invite everybody.
Yep. We're going to invite all, which is a lot less candidates on the Democratic side than the Republican side, right?
Right, right. And maybe one or two will drop out by February. But that's an interesting point, Paul, that it isn't just the number of debates is limited. The timing is not terrific for New Hampshire especially. But it's the idea that if you do an event that's unsanctioned by the DNC, you get in big fat trouble.
We don't. NH1,
yeah,
but the candidates do.
Right.
Yes, the candidates would not. We'd be exempt from the remaining debates, though after New Hampshire, there's only two more left. So candidates, come on in.
What do you make of the Democratic Party taking such a tough line, Dante?
Parties always look back on the previous election cycle and try to learn lessons. We see that on the Republican side, for example. They revamped all of their debate rules and tried to limit the number of debates, even though they're having a dozen. But that's to limit the debates because they were worried that the combined effect of those debates had a bad effect on the front runner. So parties always look back and try to figure out how can we tweak the rules a bit in order to make the nominee as strong as he or she possibly can be. So that's, I think that's what parties are doing here, and that's what the Democratic Party is trying to do, is set a firm line. But also, it certainly seems to be a set of rules that favor a front runner as opposed to lesser known candidates like, say, a Martin O'Malley.
All right. Well, let's take some more calls again. 1-800-892-6477. A couple more emails, too, coming in, gentlemen. The email address is exchange@nhpr.org. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter, too, if you like. Democrats, we're focusing on your presidential primary this hour on The Exchange, given all the attention that the Republicans have gotten. Give us a call. Let us know what Democrats you'd like to hear more from, what you want to hear from the Democratic candidates this year. 1-800-892-6477. And back to the phones, guys. Bert's calling in from Newcastle. Hi, Bert. Go ahead. You're in The Exchange.
Yeah, good morning. People oftentimes refer to Bernie Sanders as being on the left or even far left. But if you look back in the 1990s, I'd love to know the reaction to this. In the mid-1990s, there was the Democratic Leadership Conference, which was headed up by Bill Clinton, which specifically moved the party to the right. That was different. It moved it to where the money is, the corporate funding. And that was a real shift. It seems to me, having been in the Democratic Party for a long time, Bernie is very consistent with the traditions of Franklin Roosevelt, and he's really more in line, I think, with the traditional Democratic Party. I'd love to take your responses.
Thank you very much, Bert. And he's referring, Dante, to that shift by sort of Bill Clinton, Al Gore in the early 90s. I think it was the DLC, Democratic Leadership Council, that more centrist move by the Democrats. What do you think?
It's a fair point to point back to Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And a lot of people have made comparisons between, you know, the Great Depression of the 1920s, which led to the New Deal of the 1930s, to, say, the Great Recession of 2008 and following. But progressives will point out that they don't feel as if the same sorts of changes were made to the American economy and the government's role in the economy that were done in the New Deal. So I think for some Democrats, they say of Obama, where was our New Deal? We got some things done. We got health care done, for example, but we don't see the same sorts of sweeping changes that FDR made in the 1930s. And perhaps that's what Bert's, you know, referring to, and that Bernie Sanders is a lot closer. He'd be much more on board with a second New Deal, perhaps, than we would find from someone from the DLC of the 1990s.
You want to jump in, Paul?
Yeah, and I'll say one thing to what Bert was talking about. The energy right now in the Democratic Party is definitely on the left, no doubt about it, so much more so than back in the 8 or 12 cycles. The party has shifted a little bit, or at least the base, the excitement of the party has shifted to the left a lot more than what we saw just two cycles ago.
All right, let's take another call. Bert, thank you for that one. Christine in Brattleboro. Hi, Christine, go ahead. You're in the Exchange. Christine, we hope you call back. Again, the number here in the Exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Here's an email from Anne, who says, why not more on O'Malley? He seems to have conviction and integrity like Bernie, but possibly more electable than Hillary or Bernie. Thank you, Anne, for the email, a pro-O'Malley email there, Paul Steinhauser. How much traction has Martin O'Malley gotten in the Granite State?
Not a lot. I mean, we cover him when he comes here. He's getting respectable crowds, but this is the biggest surprise, right? We all thought back in the spring, okay, if there's going to be an alternative to Hillary Clinton on the left, it's going to be Martin O'Malley. I mean, why not, right? The guy's got a huge, successful progressive record in two terms as Maryland governor, younger, good-looking guy, great on TV, can play the guitar. The guy's got everything going for him. And then all of a sudden, Bernie Sanders comes in there and grabs all that support from the left that was going to go for Elizabeth Warren. It's the big question mark. O'Malley, we ask him about that. He says he's not concerned. He told me, he said, listen, the guy who's rising in the polls in July and August is not the guy who's going to be there in January or February. We'll see if that's true. But for now, he actually kind of likes Bernie Sanders' success because he thinks people will come to Bernie, but then maybe take a second look at him.
Interesting. And you mentioned the age factor. And, you know,
Bernie's 74 now. He just turned 74. Hillary's 67. Martin O'Malley's what? 50, early, mid-50s.
Is that? The Republican side is a lot younger this time around, Dante, at least in terms of those who are.
A few are. I mean, it's a wider range of ages. You go from Marco Rubio, one of the younger ones, to be sure. I don't know how much age is playing a part so far. But again, this a key question, and I think O'Malley's right about this, is electability, and that will become more important. But electability tends to be strongly tied to viability. That is, what are the chances that my favorite candidate can actually win the nomination of the party? And what O'Malley needs is something like what happened to Gary Hart about 30 years ago. Gary Hart was kind of in the second, third tier of Democratic candidates for months and months and months. No one was paying attention to him, but he got hot at the end and finished second in Iowa and then won in New Hampshire. O'Malley needs something like that, like a Sanders collapse in Iowa, and to emerge as the alternative to Hillary Clinton. But the problem for O'Malley is, Paul's right, Sanders just sucked up all the oxygen in the left wing of the party.
All right. Well, and that's why Martin O'Malley wants more of those debates and forums. Real quick, Paul. Yeah.
Yeah. One. Number one. He's at 1%. Martin O'Malley's at 1% in the last two polls here in New Hampshire.
Okay.
Says a lot.
Well, and here's an email from Chris in Berlin. We'll just go into the break with this. Chris says, Bernie has proven himself to be above dirty ads. Bernie has never run a dirty ad. It's not just that it's primary season, as was alluded to. Chris, thank you for the email. We'll take a lot more of your calls and emails after a short break. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. More in a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're talking about the Democratic presidential candidates, given all the attention on the Republican side this year. We're taking some time out to focus on the Democrats running for president here in New Hampshire. They'll all be in the Granite State, by the way, this weekend for the state party convention. Let's hear from you, Democrats. Which candidates have you seen campaigning around the Granite State? Which candidates do you want to see more of? And what do you want to hear from these presidential candidates? 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org, 1-800-892-6477. Our guests are Dante Scala, Associate Professor at UNH. Dante is also teaching a free online course on the New Hampshire presidential primary with Andy Smith of the UNH Survey Center. He's got a forthcoming book about the Republicans and the presidential nomination. Paul Steinhauser is also here, political director and anchor for NH1 News. One more time, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Gentlemen, back to the callers, and let's go to Mike in Goffstown. Hi, Mike. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to point out that there's a lot of things that Bernie is pushing and supporting that Hillary, Biden, or none of the Democrats, you know, the establishment, are really even talking about, you know, like negotiating drug prices, student loan interest rates. I mean, there's just so many things that are really important to the average voter that nobody's talking about. And I think that's where Bernie Sanders is resonating.
So what are some of the issues that you like that he's putting on the table?
Well, I like the Medicare buy-in for all. So in other words, that would set a floor for the price of health insurance. I like the end the gerrymandering thing that he talks about. And allowing the government just to negotiate drug prices seems huge. Student loan rates, I have a kid going to college here in the next couple of years, and that's really, really important to me.
Right. Okay, Mike, thank you. Yeah, did you want to add something else in there, Mike?
Well, net neutrality is also a big thing for me.
Okay.
If you don't have a free and open internet, you know, where are you going to get your information?
So let's talk about some of these issues, guys. And I'm glad that Mike called, because even though in a primary, Republican or Democrat, there's often not a lot of daylight between candidates on issues because they're all from the same party. But Dante, what do you think? You first, where do you see these candidates differing either on positions or at least in terms of emphasis? Mike says he likes the issues that Bernie Sanders is emphasizing.
Yeah, certainly we've heard a lot about student loans this particular cycle, more so than in others. And at least originally, that was seen to be one of the benefits of a Sanders campaign for the left wing of the Democratic Party, that he was going to push Clinton on certain issues. And sure enough, we've seen Clinton come out with positions on issues like student loans. You know, for example, Sanders talks about making public colleges and universities tuition free. Clinton wasn't willing to go quite that far, but was issued her own plan about making sure that students don't have to take on debt to go to college. And so there was, we're seeing Clinton calibrate her message toward the issues that Sanders is talking about. A key set of differences, I think, is on foreign policy. And we haven't heard much about that because, as your caller points out, Sanders talks a lot more about domestic policy than he does foreign policy. But that's where there's some really clear daylight, more so on perhaps than on domestic policy, because Clinton is definitely more hawkish within the Democratic Party. And that's not a way that you would describe Bernie Sanders or I think Martin O'Malley for that matter.
Trade has been another dividing line for Democrats, Paul, right?
Huge one. The trade deal, the Pacific Partnership trade deal has been a big sticking point. Bernie Sanders, Martin O'Malley, and a few of the other Democrats running for the nomination railing against, and Hillary Clinton not taking a stance right now. She, remember, as Secretary of State, she was part of the negotiations there. So trade, which is a big issue for a lot of those on the left, is a big divider. Guns is another one. This one actually works a little bit against Bernie Sanders, right? And you've seen surrogates to Hillary Clinton's campaign and Martin O'Malley's campaign going after Bernie Sanders on this one because Bernie Sanders comes from a state where, like New Hampshire, guns are not the anathema that they are in many other Democratic strongholds. So Bernie coming under attack on his stance on gun control and on his past votes on gun control.
Okay. Well, thank you for bringing up those issues, Mike. I appreciate it. And another issue that I have heard all these Democratic candidates talking about, more so this year, Dante, than perhaps any other year, is campaign finance reform. Even the ones who have tons and tons of money are saying, ooh, this is not a good system. And there's one candidate in particular, Harvard professor Lawrence Lessig, who is running as a Democrat, as a single-issue candidate. Lawrence Lessig says all other policy concerns have to wait until campaign finance reform is achieved. Let's hear from Lawrence Lessig.
I don't care what your issue is. You might be somebody that actually cares about two or three issues. Doesn't matter. Every one of these issues depends on solving this fundamental issue first. And once we solve it, I think it's possible to imagine dealing with those issues.
So Lawrence Lessig running as a Democrat, but really just to put campaign finance reform on the front burner. Other candidates are talking about it, Dante. Has he been successful?
Well, unclear if Lessig himself has been successful. I mean, because he got into the presidential campaign just a couple weeks ago when he managed to raise $1 million by Labor Day. Although it has certainly been a long-running issue for him, and we've seen Lessig up here in New Hampshire before talking about campaign finance. But we've certainly heard a lot of that from Bernie Sanders. We've heard from Hillary Clinton. A lot of talk about overturning the Citizens United decision, for example. So a lot of discussion about campaign finance reform. Should be said as well, though, that Clinton is going to be depending a lot on, you know, big money donors to gain advantages in terms of campaign finance over Sanders.
Yeah, go ahead, Paul.
Big issue here in New Hampshire. We've seen the New Hampshire Rebellion, which is this grassroots group. They've been doing a lot of marches, a couple of them coming across the state, and they've been railing against big money in politics. So here in this state, especially on the Democratic side, it is an issue that definitely resonates.
Go ahead, Dante.
I mean, Lessig's idea is that you can't really solve any issues that are in front of us in the country unless you solve campaign finance.
Because the money's polluting the conversation, the action on those issues.
Yeah, that's, and essentially, right, yeah, that politicians are locked in by special interests and by the current campaign finance system. If you change the system, then you allow politicians the freedom to reach solutions.
And Bernie Sanders continues to tout in interviews, campaign stops, that he doesn't have a super PAC backing him, right? He's the only candidate out there just about who doesn't have a super PAC backing because he wants to get away from the big money that gets involved in politics.
Let's take another call. And this is Dan in Nashua. Hi, Dan. Go ahead. You're in the Exchange.
Hi. Thanks for having me. Was excited to hear you talking about this issue of money in politics just now. It's something which I feel like a lot of voters in New Hampshire are up in arms about, not just Democratic voters, but Republican voters, too. And the statements that Donald Trump has made in the Republican debates, for example, calling other Republicans puppets for taking big money. But I think on the Democratic side, it was especially noteworthy, I thought, last week when former Senator Secretary Clinton came out with a really landmark, very comprehensive set of proposals on campaign finance reform. And it's something that Bernie Sanders has been talking a lot about. Of course, Lawrence Lessig is making his number one issue or his only issue. And so I'm struck, having watched a lot of presidential primaries in New Hampshire where candidates would mention it here and there, and now see candidates kind of trying to outdo one another with really comprehensive proposals. And Secretary Clinton's were fairly unprecedented, as far as I could tell, as far as how specific and far-reaching she's going.
And yet, Dan, I have to ask you this, and I read that the group I think you're involved with, the New Hampshire Rebellion, you know, said they were pleased with Secretary Clinton's statements on this. And yet she's got a lot of money behind her, some big donors and big super PACs and so forth. So put those two pieces together for me.
It's a tough one. You're right. The New Hampshire Rebellion, which I direct, was thrilled with the position she took. And urges other candidates to do the same, and we've seen Republicans take some good positions too. The system that they're in is a really broken one, and while we would love to see candidates completely opt out of it and not refuse any super PAC support, refuse to raise the big money, it's hard to imagine a candidate getting elected president without it under the rules as they are today. So we think that really the key priority is that candidates commit to fixing it and okay, get much more specific than they've been in the past.
All right, Dan, thank you for calling in. And one more candidate has been talking about this issue of money in politics. And as Dan says, all of them have been talking about it. We're going to hear a little bit now from former Virginia U.S. Senator Jim Webb. He's also running for president, although has had almost no campaign here in the Granite State. We'll talk about that in a minute. But here's Jim Webb speaking at the Iowa State Fair last month, again, addressing this issue of campaign finance.
I will say two things to you. First of all, I am unbought and I am unbossed. I do not, you know, I will listen to everyone, but I have my own mind. Everybody knows it if they see the entire trajectory of my career. And the second one is, if you don't like these super PACs, I don't have a super PAC, by the way. I hear people saying, I don't like the super PACs. I don't like the, you know, the super PAC. The idea is you can only give me $2,700 for my election campaign, but you can walk across the street and write a check for $27 million in a super PAC. I think that's wrong. And you ought to be asking candidates, if you think that's wrong, why are you taking the money? And for all of you, I will say, if you want to change that, then vote with someone who won't do it.
Again, that's Jim Webb, former Virginia U.S. Senator, who's also running for president on the Democratic side, speaking about campaign finance in Iowa last month. And Paul Steinhauser, how much have you seen here in New Hampshire, Jim Webb?
Not much, I'll be honest. I interviewed him when he was up here. I think it was in late May or early June. He announced for president officially back in early July. He hasn't been up here since. He's coming up this weekend for the New Hampshire Democratic primary, New Hampshire Democratic Party convention. But he has not set foot in this state since announcing for president, which is bizarre. I asked one of his top advisors about that. What's the strategy? And he's told me at the time, this was back in early August, that, you know, they were going to let the summer play out before they really got involved. That doesn't sound to me like a man who's really in it to win it.
Well, and there's been a lot going on this summer. I mean, candidates, yes. Republican and Democrat, have been all over the state. It's been very, very busy. So, Dante, if you're not there, are you really a player? Why are you doing this?
No, you're not a player. Running for office requires activity, and there's precious little of that in Jim Webb's campaign. There have been a few candidates. So
you're much more polite than me. That's very nice of you to say. I'm like, Jim Webb, get up here. What are you doing? You're a professor. I'm not.
And he'll be here this weekend, Jim
Finally.
Webb, right?
Finally.
Yeah, at that Democratic
I'm
convention.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
That's all right. There's a couple dozen candidates on the Republican and Democratic side, and a few just seem to be in it in order to appear on the debate stage at least once. I mean, Jim Gilmore, for example, on the Republican side, also from Virginia, his main activity so far has been being in one of the Fox debates. And Jim Webb seems on the same trajectory. He just wants to appear on the stage with the real candidates. But that seems to be all he's doing.
But I will say one thing about Jim Webb, which is interesting. If he does get involved and get very serious, you know, most of the candidates, all the candidates are either in the center left or far left of the party. If Jim Webb really makes a run at it, he's going to run more from the middle, except on some issues like the Iraq War. He is much, much more moderate than all the other Democratic presidential candidates.
A long history with the military. And mm-hmm. I was looking at his website this morning. He does not like this Iran deal. And there's some other issues where he parts company on foreign policy, as you said. So maybe we'll hear more from him this weekend. Here's an email that just came in from Bill. And Bill, I'm glad you emailed, because this is another candidate that we have not talk that much about this hour. Bill says, I was able to attend some of the conversation with the candidates. By far the best part was Governor Lincoln Chafee. He made more sense than the others, with a good resume on prior performance as a legislator. Bill says, I think he would be the best match to run as VP with Sanders. So just give us a quick bio sketch on a Lincoln Chafee, Paul.
Used to be a Republican down in Rhode Island. He was actually an alderman and then the mayor of Bristol. Eventually became senator, his father's old seat. Ran as an independent for governor and won, then moved over to the Democratic Party, backed Barack Obama and endorsed him in the 2012 election, and now is running for the nomination. So he's done the whole spectrum there. He's been up here a number of times running, but very little media attention, small crowds, not gathering a lot of steam right now.
Well, and here is Lincoln Chafee in an interview with WGBH's Jim Browdy, talking about what you just mentioned, Paul, you know, starting as a Republican, moving to an independent, now a Democrat. Let's hear.
That's a fair question. But when you look at the issues, which are more important than your party affiliation, whether it's passion for the environmental protection, passion for building the middle class, passion for staying out of these quagmires overseas, passion for protecting our civil liberties, you'll see over my, and you said 20-year record, even longer than that, councilman, mayor, senator, governor, I have never changed. Never changed on my passion for the environmental protections, passion for protecting civil liberties, building the middle class. And you can look at my record.
Again, that's Lincoln Chafee, Democratic presidential candidate, talking on WGBH. What do you think about this Chafee campaign, Dante Scala?
It's a very uphill battle for someone like Chafee, very lightly regarded. But he is, to his credit, as Paul said, you know, putting in a lot of grassroots activity in New Hampshire, coming up to the state, which is more than we can say for former Senator Webb. But still a lot, you know, if makes O'Malley's campaign look formidable in comparison, you know.
Okay. Well, thank you again, Bill, for the email. And gentlemen, just to wrap up with you. So as I mentioned a couple times, there is this big convention this weekend. In addition to the presidential candidates, top state Democrats will be there. And just recently, Paul Steinhauser, a couple top Democrats have come out for Hillary Clinton. Jean Shaheen, Anne McClain Custer, Dean Barker with Blue Hampshire, the Democratic website or blog. What do you make of these sort of Democratic heavyweights weighing in for Hillary right in advance of this convention?
Yeah, the Shaheen one was the one we were all talking about in the media. We knew it was going to come. Listen, she's been a Clinton supporter forever, right? But so the timing was the key issue. So why now? And was it because Bernie Sanders was rising in the polls? The Clinton campaign up here saying, no, not at all. We wanted to do it on Labor Day because that's traditionally when people start tuning into the campaign. But the timing is very interesting. It comes when Bernie Sanders is dramatically rising in the polls.
What do you make of these endorsements that have just come down, Dante?
Well, Senator Shaheen's endorsement's unlike any others. Right? I mean, it's a sitting senator who just ran a campaign, has a formidable organization, and she is a veteran of New Hampshire presidential primaries going back to Jimmy Carter. So she's seen more than one Democratic primary and knows the rhythms of a Democratic primary, what it's like to come from behind and so forth. Dean Barker's endorsement is also interesting because if Sanders is going to win next February, it's going to depend on his doing really well in the Connecticut River Valley, in the towns along the Vermont border. So if you look in those areas where you find more progressive Democratic voters, he's going to need every one of their support in order to win.
And that's why the second CD endorsement from Custer, right?
Exactly.
All right. Dante, I just want to mention before we close out that we have a link to your online course on the New Hampshire presidential primary. So that's there. I want to thank both you and Paul Steinhauser very much for being here. We really appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Welcome.
Well, and we talked earlier about campaign finance reform and the campaign of Martin O'Malley. Paul, I think you mentioned that. We're going to close out the show with former Governor O'Malley singing "This Land Is Your Land." Now, he did this on Wall Street to see how much money he could make singing and playing his guitar to raise awareness about campaign contributions. So, Martin O'Malley, you get the last word today on The Exchange.
This land was made for you and me. Nobody living can ever stop me as I go walking that freedom highway. Nobody living can ever make me turn back. This land was made for you.